It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're devoting most of our show today to remembering the late great Pirates outfielder Roberto Clemente, who would have been 80 years old today. In October, a new play about Clemente is coming to Point Park University's Conservatory Theater Company. The musical 21 is written and composed by Pittsburgh native Alky Stereopoulos. He grew up here and is now based in Vermont. Mr. Stereopoulos began working on the play in 2007, but in October, it will mark the debut of 21 as a full production. Mr. Stereopoulos joins us to talk about 21 and the significance of its debut in the Steel City. Alky Stereopoulos, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you, Paul. Lovely to be with you.
What compelled you to write a musical about Roberto Clemente?
Good story. Good question. When Clemente's plane went down, I was a young man of 19. And being a musician in Pittsburgh, I had played, as all musicians will, on New Year's Eve. And as all young men will do, I had stayed up all night and afterwards and partied with my pals and hung out. The next morning, I had to get in the van and drive the band equipment out to our next gig in Indiana. And I was doing it on no sleep, as young foolish men will do. And on the turnpike, I started falling asleep. So I turned on the radio, hoping that that would keep me awake. And even with the radio playing, my chin hit my chest. And a newsflash came on saying that Clemente's plane had gone down at sea and that all aboard were believed dead. And the shock of hearing this woke me up just as I was about to slam into the back of an 18-wheeler gasoline tanker.
Wow.
I was so close to ramming this thing at turnpike speeds that the front of my van was so filled with the truck that I could not even see its license plate in that moment of near impact. So I stood on my brakes, and I jumped the median strip and came up on the other side with horns blaring, white-knuckled, sweating, and but alive with the news that Clemente was dead and that I was alive because of that announcement. So all my life I lived with that, and years later I had read probably the most famous quote attributed to Roberto, and I paraphrase it somewhat, but he had said, if a man has a chance to make a difference in someone's life and in life and doesn't, then he hasn't really been here. And it started me thinking that in so many ways, whatever you want to call it, fate or coincidence or synchronicity, or we influence everyone influences everyone else in ways sometimes that we can't even know. In this case, I was here, and I had grown to be a man and live a life because of Clemente's death, and there was no way that he could ever know that his death had saved my life. And I started to write a short story about it, and as I was writing the short story, it started to sing itself to me. And so I started sketching out some tunes, imagining it to maybe be a song cycle. And then little by little, I realized, no, this thing actually wants to be a musical. And that's how it was born. I started writing that in 2007. And 2 years later, we had our first very humble, bare-bones presentation of it. And since then, it's continued to morph and grow into the show 21.
And you have the background as a musician and also as a director of musicals.
A musical director, actually, more precisely. Yeah, after Pittsburgh, I bounced around a lot of different places, made my way to Los Angeles and Florida and Colorado and all over, and wound up in New York City.
Well, given your and Clemente's ties to Pittsburgh, it seems fitting that 21 would debut here. How did the Point Park production come about?
Well, we had, again, a little piece of fate, if you will. We had, when I say we, myself and other interested parties had approached all the big players in town and some of the smaller ones, and no one bid on it. They had various and sundry things that they liked, didn't like, or practical considerations that came into play. And my wife was actually a dancer in New York on Broadway, and she had gone to Point Park as a dance major. So she had an old friend there a few years back that she had sent the show to, and we never heard from them. We came to find out now, years later, that it was only because they're concerned that they couldn't quite cast it with enough students that could play the roles of the many Puerto Ricans, the family, and townspeople. So along the way, that changed. And by chance, we were at a party in New York where my wife ran into another of her dance colleagues from Point Park who still had an association with the school. So she made a call to a fellow named Joe McKendrick, who's a dean of admissions or some sort of thing like that at Point Park, who passed it along to the producers and artistic director, and it reminded them that it was there. And in the intervening years, they had taken on more of a black population and an ethnic population in the student body that would allow to do a show like 21 Now. And so the timing was right. They were looking for a property that would offer that opportunity, and we are it.
We're talking with Pittsburgh native Alky Stereopoulos. He is now a playwright based in Vermont, and he has written a musical about the life of Roberto Clemente. It is called 21, and it is set to debut in Pittsburgh in October. Which part of Clemente's life does this story, your story, focus on?
Well, it picks up with the period just as he's playing. He's a rising young star in Puerto Rico, and he's coming to the attention of a lot of people. And he gets picked up by the farm team of the Montreal Royals, is the team that are stationed in Brooklyn. And he gets drafted by them first, where they're hiding him away because they don't want to tip their hand about this talented kid, but they don't want anybody else to play him either. And the Pirates get the buzz on him, and they steal him away in the next draft, and the rest, of course, is history. He's in Pittsburgh. So it is his life just before he gets drafted and comes up to the States all the way to his death, and focuses on a piece of his life that I think a lot of folks won't know about. In the Latino world, women play a very deep part in their men's lives, and in the case of Clemente, his mother, Doña Luisa, his wife, Vera, and his lesser known, his dead sister, Ana Iris, all very much formed who he became as a man and as a player. And Clemente swore that his sister, Ana Iris, was present with him as a guiding spirit force throughout his life, and that she would often point the way or goad him to be greater or calm him in his rages. She was very much an influence in his life on and off the field at important pivotal moments in his life. And so in 21, you learn about how these influences that were very far removed from a baseball field shaped him as a man and gave him the integrity that he's known for and encouraged him to be as great as he knew he could be.
Roberto Clemente is still celebrated not only here in Pittsburgh and not only by baseball fans. Why do you think his legacy endures?
Well, someone had said that if Roberto Clemente hadn't gone down on that plane on a mission of mercy, that he would be just another great ball player in the Hall of Fame. And I understand what they meant by that, because there are so many great players, each of them with their own specific greatness at what they did best. But I think at the time of his death, it said that Clemente was the most recognized black face in the world, much the way that Muhammad Ali came to be and Nelson Mandela. In fact, it was his very fame that instigated him to fly with the aid to Nicaragua when his plane went down, because Somoza, the dictator of Nicaragua, it became known that the aid that was coming into the country, he was putting it in on the black market rather than releasing it to his own people. And his own people were being shot in the back trying to get food and medical supplies by his soldiers. So when Clemente learned that the plane loads he had sent down were not being given to the people and fed into the black market, he said, I'm going down with the plane load and I'm going to hand it out myself because they won't dare shoot me. And he was right about that. He had become such a beloved figure around the world for his humanitarian efforts and all the great things he was doing for baseball. And that was the very reason why he had to do this thing. And I think all his life he had had a prophetic vision that he would not live long, that he would not live into his old age, and it used to make people crazy because he referred to this a lot. He wasn't shy about it, nor was he scared of it. And I think he knew, many people suspected, and there's a lot of spooky stuff around the circumstances of his death. He knew that there was a chance if he got on that plane that he might not be coming back, and yet he did it because he felt like he had to do it. He had to do the thing. If he wasn't willing to do it, he couldn't ask anyone else to do it. And that kind of integrity and that kind of bravery that makes you take that kind of a step is something that most people wouldn't have, never mind athletes or ball players. He was just, as a man, I think, was so heads and shoulders above the norm. And that's what became very much an inspiration or a guide to people, not just in Pittsburgh, but all around the world. I can remember when he first came up how much stuff he had to endure by virtue of being not just black, but also of being misunderstood in his heavy accented English, and how in Pittsburgh, which was very much an ethnic blue-collar working man's town, he was made fun of and he was reviled, and even in my own household, listening to my father make disparaging remarks. Yet over the course of his career, everybody came to realize that he walked his talk and that what we perceived as arrogance was confidence and assuredness. And yeah, it was cocky, but he backed it up, and his unassailable integrity just swung the world to his side.
21, the musical, will have its world premiere by Point Park University's Conservatory Theater Company at the Pittsburgh Playhouse. The show runs October 17th. Through October 26th, and we've been talking with the playwright, the author of 21, Alky Stereopoulos, a Pittsburgh native who is now based in Vermont. Alky Stereopoulos, thank you so much for sharing this story with us. We look forward to seeing the play on stage in October.
Paul, it's my great pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, and I'll look forward to seeing you there at the Playhouse.
Coming up, we'll talk with Clemente's longtime teammate, Steve Blass. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESO.
Look how he's going to take a chance and run home on Roberto. You think by now they have learned to not test the arm of Roberto.
Antonio! Who is this boy?
Leading off of the Jungos Mules, Roberto Clemente!
Thanks, hombre.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're spending the majority of today's show observing what would have been Roberto Clemente's 80th birthday. Clemente played for 18 seasons with the Pirates, and during that time, perhaps none of his teammates got to know him better than pitcher Steve Blass. Mr. Blass joined the Pirates in 1964, a time when Clemente had come into his own as the leader of the team. By 1971, Blass and Clemente led the Pirates to a World Series victory over the Baltimore Orioles. Steve Blass pitching complete game victories in games 4 and 7, while Clemente batted .414 and was voted the series' most valuable player. Steve Blass is now a Pirates broadcaster. He joins us by phone. Steve, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Well, thank you. It's nice to be here. Roberto Clemente would have been 80 years old. I think he probably still would have been in great, great shape. But we miss him to this day.
It's interesting because we saw Roberto Clemente in his late 30s playing for the Pirates as late as the 1972 season. I can remember watching him from the upper deck at Three Rivers Stadium in right field, basically looking over his shoulder as he made a throw to home plate to throw out a runner at the plate. I mean, he was still doing things like that, and then the next thing you know, he's gone. Does that make it hard to imagine him as an older man today?
Yeah, it does. Again, I would think at age 80, he would still have that composure about him, that look, that presence, if you will, that he had at age 38, just before he died on that trip to Nicaragua. I've often told people that, say, what would he be like in the later years had he survived? I think he would have been the governor of Puerto Rico. I have no doubt that he had that much influence and that much charisma, that much feel for the people on that island. And I have no doubt that he would have been very successful in that role.
We've heard a lot about Roberto Clemente's accomplishments on and off the field. But, Steve, what was he like as a person?
Well, that's a many-faceted question and would demand a very multifaceted response. He's obviously a very proud person, very, very bright. I think a lot more intelligent than people might have realized because English was his second language. Uncompromising in his principles, and a good sense of humor, but somewhat guarded with people around him that he trusted and felt that wouldn't misinterpret him. I think he was reluctant many times to extend himself because of the language thing. I know there are many occasions where he would speak in English, and it would not exactly be interpreted with the intent that he had. Had he been able to voice his concerns and opinions and ideas in Spanish. And I think that frustrated him a little bit and might have made him a little cautious in terms of what he said at times, but he was never hesitant to express himself. So maybe I don't give him enough credit for that. But as a person, I thought he was great. It was an honor to be around him for the 10 years that I spent as a teammate. Very principled guy. I never saw him compromise with the things he felt strongly about. And because of that, I think the legacy has lasted. You know, sometimes we'll just say what people want to hear, but Clemente never did that. He said what he felt strongly about. And so I think that's why the legacy endures. And every year you have a book or a film or a documentary or a street named after him or a playground or a school. And to have that legacy last through all these years speaks volumes about the kind of person he was.
You came up to the Pirates in 1964. By that time, Roberto Clemente had been in the big leagues for close to 10 seasons, but it really wasn't until players like Dick Groat, who was the MVP in 1960, moved on that Clemente started to assume the role of team leader. And this was really unprecedented because, as you mentioned, he was Puerto Rican. His English was his second language. He also was black. So describe how he took that mantle and how the players around him accepted his leadership.
I think leaders lead by example. Clemente was unbelievably gifted. And just as the years went on with him performing at the level he did, I think that was the indication that he was going to be a leader, and I think totally by performance, evolved that way.
Clemente reportedly felt that he was not given the respect he deserved in the mid to late 60s because he was black and Puerto Rican. If that's true, why do you suppose that was?
Oh, I don't know about my my abilities to get into the social aspects of all that, but you got to consider, you know, in the 60s, we weren't completely aware of the equality that should exist, and so he was a product of his times, and for him to surpass that, go on and reach those levels, I think speaks of him not only as a baseball player, but the way he expressed himself and the way he carried himself, and as time went on, people became aware of that. And that's not a quick sell. It's not an easy sell. But he was remarkably consistent. And at some point, he realized that, okay, he is black. Okay, English is his second language. But this is a very exceptional person. And so you get beyond those things, and you come to appreciate him.
One of the things that Clemente did as the 60s went on and became more politicized, and there was obviously a very strong push for civil rights in this country and in Pittsburgh as well, he spoke out and expressed his support for leaders like Martin Luther King. Meanwhile, back in the clubhouse, how was it taken by the players, the fact that Roberto Clemente was taking stands on social and political issues?
From my standpoint, completely a degree of high degree of respect, because we were baseball players. You're consumed with baseball. You're consumed with family, and this guy was able to extend himself beyond the game of baseball, beyond family, and be aware of social issues, and not only the color of somebody's skin, but he always said, "I respect people who struggle," and so regardless of whether you're white or black, and he had a sense of people who weren't handed things, who struggled to work and support a family and exist. And I think that was a product of his upbringing with his parents and the conditions in which he grew up in Puerto Rico. And I don't think those lessons, those feelings, those experiences ever left him.
Clemente also had a reputation for being a hypochondriac. Do you know why that was?
I remember the phrase he said when he was asked that one more thousandth time. He said, "A hypochondriac can not produce. I produce. Simple as that. Everybody has aches and pains." He had a magnificent body, but this was a body that hid things too. He had skeletal issues with his neck and back, and there were a lot of issues going on in his body that you wouldn't know about because he was a magnificent specimen. I mean, at age 38, when he died, he had the body of a 25-year-old if you looked at it from the outside. But I know our trainers and our medical people said this guy was not a hypochondriac. There were issues going on with him. But again, in spite of that stuff, he excelled. Roberto Clemente was not a hypochondriac. I don't care what anybody says.
I understand that he was a guy that you could joke around with, and there's a story about how you hid under the trainer's table one time and gave him the Mission Impossible bit.
Oh, yeah. Well, we did that several times. I got to be fairly close to him because of those things, and he was comfortable with me because he knew that he could let himself relax and have a good time. And I wouldn't go out of the clubhouse, "Hey, I had a great time with Roberto Clemente. We did this and we did that." It was comfortable with him. Yeah, I would horse around with him a lot. And that was a wonderful feeling that I could have that kind of rapport with him. So that was very important to me. I loved every minute of it, that I could kid around with him. It was a level, apparently, that he was comfortable with.
Can you give us an example of one of the things you might have done with him at one time?
Well, like you said, I would get under the table and he was just getting ready to go out on the field and pretend I was Peter Graves or whoever it was, the Mission Impossible. I would give him his assignment to hit three doubles off Jack Billingham and throw three people out at third base. And I would disavow any knowledge of him and his wild, it just went on and on, the dialogue, like I was in a telephone booth giving him his instructions.
And he'd play along with that?
No, he just, I was under the table and I could hear him giggling and laughing a little bit. And we would have fun with that. And there were other things we could do that probably weren't of a family nature, that just horsing around with the profanity and all that in a clubhouse setting that stayed right there.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking with former Pirates pitcher Steve Blass about the late, great Roberto Clemente, who would have turned 80 years old today. The Pirates won the 1971 World Series due in large part to how you and Roberto performed during those seven games. Steve, you pitched a three-hit complete game victory in Game 3, a four-hitter in Game 7. Clemente batted .414 and won the MVP award. Describe what it was like to rise to the level of play that you did right alongside Clemente in the fall, in October of 1971.
Well, first of all, you go back to the fact that I think for the first year and a half, I hardly dared talk to him because I had him up on this pedestal, like all of us young pirates that came up when he was really in his heyday, and because he had a very stern countenance, and you almost had to feel like you had to validate yourself that you were good enough to play on a team with him, and I was certainly in that category. So to get to the point where I was kind of on equal footing for a 10-day period, let's say, in October of 1971, is one of the things that I'm proudest of, to have been able to play on that stage and be a part of that, and almost at an equal level, even to the point where the next spring training I said, hey, Roberto, you know, I know you won the MVP, and you win a car when you get that, but listen, you know, I had a couple of real good games too. I should at least get the tires. And then he said something to me in Spanish that I can't repeat in a kidding way. So, you know, we did get on equal footing at that point. And when he came up the aisle of the plane and said, come out here and stand in the aisle of the airplane on the way home after the World Series, he called me out and said, let me embrace you. And he gave me a hug, and I just held on. I didn't say a word to him, but I have that image in my mind forever. So to get to a point where we were almost on equal footing in terms of approach and what we were trying to do was something I'm very proud of.
Clemente had played in the World Series prior to 1971, of course, with the Pirates in 1960. But other than Mazeroski and, I guess, Danny Murtaugh, there was nobody on the team who'd been to the World Series before, and I'm sure there were some nerves that went along with that. What did Clemente do to instill confidence in you and the other Pirates players during that series?
I don't know that he inspired confidence. We were a very confident bunch. I mean, we knew we were good. We knew we were capable of performing at that highest level in the World Series. So I have a different take on motivation and inspiration. I think that your bathroom mirror is the one thing that is the most truthful and that you have to answer to. That's the motivation I feel strongly about. But his example of how to approach your craft without saying much. I mean, I saw what he did day in, day out in terms of not motivating me, but wanting to approach my craft as well as he did. I knew I wasn't at that level of a player that he was, but damn it, if I can't do as much to prepare myself and try as hard and try to do as much as he did, then shame on me. So he was an example, as was Maz, as was Willie Stargell, as was everybody in our ball club. So I think you inspire yourself in the bottom line. But I loved watching everything he did, and that helped me be a better baseball player. I didn't want to take my eyes off him. I didn't want to miss anything he did because he played the game at a different level above the average major leaguer who's entirely gifted. And so to watch him play, I would have been embarrassed if I didn't compete at least as hard as he did.
Less than 18 months after that tremendous World Series victory in 1971, Clemente died in a plane crash taking relief supplies to earthquake-ravaged Nicaragua. Steve, where were you when you got word of Roberto Clemente's death?
I was at a New Year's Eve party, hosting a New Year's Eve party at my house. And Dave Justy, a teammate of both Clemente and mine, Dave and his wife, Jenny, were at our house, and we got a call, I think at about 2 o'clock in the morning. And it was Bill Guilfoyle, our PR director. And he said there's been an unconfirmed report that a plane went down in Puerto Rico and that Clemente was on it. And that's all we knew at that point until, obviously, it was confirmed later that morning, New Year's Day morning, when we were at Joe Brown's house. We all live in the South Hills, and Dave and I obviously didn't sleep much that night and found ourselves at Joe's house early in the morning, and that's when the report was confirmed.
Can you put into words the level of shock and sadness that the Pirates team felt?
Well, first of all, I think the shoulders of the city of Pittsburgh slumped when we got that report that was confirmed. And it was, I mean, the level of shock was unreal. Wait a minute, Clemente's dead. How? What? Well, how could that happen? And it did. The grief was tremendous throughout the city, on the ball club, and then the crazy thing was then you're grieving, and then as grieving goes, it gets less and less. Hopefully, when tragedies occur, and then a few months later, or a month or so later, a month and a half, you go to spring training, and all of a sudden it's back in your face again, because here we are in spring training to start a season, and Clemente's not there for the first time in, what, 20 years, 18, 20 years, and so you go through the whole shock slash grieving thing again when you get to spring training that year in 1973.
And then the season starts, and what was it like for the team to try and play games and focus on winning when there's this trauma that is still with you?
Well, you're trained. You're trained to go out and perform and play and try to win. So that kind of takes care of itself to a degree. But still, to look out there and not see Clemente in right field, you go about your business and your preparation, but it's certainly not the same, and probably more so to the fans that come out to opening day. And all of a sudden you look out on the field, an overview from a fan standpoint, and Clemente's not in right field. And just I'm sure that it just didn't look right, didn't feel right to the people that were in the ballpark.
You had been an all-star in 1972. The Pirates came within an inning of going to their second World Series in as many years. And then here it is, 1973. The team is struggling to play at a 500 level, and suddenly, out of nowhere, a pitcher as accomplished as you are is having trouble throwing the ball over the plate and maintaining control over your pitches. And this has been well documented and referred to as Steve Blass disease. Was it a coincidence that it happened right after Clemente died, or as you look back on it, did that have some effect on you?
Not that I'm aware of. To this day, I don't think it was related. Maybe it was, but to my knowledge, I didn't feel that it was. I didn't feel. Clemente and I were friends. We both had friends that were closer to each other. So it wasn't like my very, very best friend was gone and now that affected me. I didn't look at it that way. I don't look at it that way now. I miss him. I missed him tremendously. I still do. But I don't put the two things together.
As we end this conversation, Steve, what are the things that people should remember about Clemente, not only in terms of the man's legacy, but just the man himself?
Well, we should look back and say we were fortunate in our city of Pittsburgh and the surrounding area to be able to have that guy perform in front of us for 18 wonderful years. He was a unique player, a Hall of Famer, and he represented the qualities of a principled man. And that's a rare combination. I mean, most of us are ball players, and okay, that's fine. It's wonderful. It's a gift. It's a talent. You have an appreciation. But this guy went beyond being a baseball player to extending himself to causes that he believed in, to principles that he believed in. And so he extended himself more into other areas than a lot of us did. I mean, we all cared about our charities and doing the right thing, giving back to our community. But Roberto went beyond that. And for us to have that type of a person come into our city and represent himself and the Pirates and the city of Pittsburgh, we should not forget him. We're very fortunate and continue to be because of his having been here.
Steve Blass is a Pittsburgh Pirates broadcaster. He pitched for the Pirates for 10 seasons, all but one of those, as a teammate of Roberto Clemente's, who we are remembering today. Steve Blass, thank you so much for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, Paul. Enjoyed the visit.
And from one Pirate pitcher to another, we'll learn what's being done to rescue the reputation of Fritz Ostermueller, whose family believes he was inaccurately depicted as a racist in the baseball movie 42. That's next as Essential Pittsburgh continues on 90.5 WESA.